Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Monday, March 25th at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Circuit Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to Fire campaign is part of the national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures Out of Detroit. This peaceful protest calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to Fire campaign in protest on Monday, March 25th at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. For more information, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KABU, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Heather McCoy Show.
And welcome to the Heather McCoy Show on KBOO Portland. Joining me for the hour is radio host and multimedia creator, content creator, Michael Brown. His recent YouTube.com channel got his YouTube.com channel got demonetized. Basically, YouTube is citing copyright reasons, but Dr. Brown believes there's an alternate explanation for this. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brown.
Hey, great to be with you, Heather. Thanks.
Oh, nice for you to reach out and join us this morning. To set up the listeners, give a background to your ongoing issues with YouTube.
Sure thing. And first, we recognize they're a private company. They can operate on whatever guidelines they want. We're just asking for consistency, fairness, etc. But what happened was we started to get different videos demonetized a couple of years ago. And, you know, one day I noticed that there were 10, then 20, then 30, and then suddenly it went to almost 900 were just demonetized without explanation. So we got flagged for something. We could never find out what it was. And then what we began to see was that if there was any controversial subject we were addressing, LGBTQ issues, things like that, biblical perspectives on social issues, that those would get flagged, but we couldn't get explanation why. And then it would kind of go back and forth that some would get approved, some would get flagged. So we just said, could you give us some consistency? Could you explain what's happening? And unfortunately, the customer service was beyond horrific. And then what happened last year, we did a video called Can You Be Gay and Christian? Looking at what scripture says, 6-minute animated video, kind of like the PragerU type videos. And for the first time ever, we had an advertising budget where we advertised on YouTube. So that meant that our video would now appear before other videos on different channels. And because of the subject matter, it ended up appearing on some gay and transgender YouTube channels, which was never our intent. That to me would be intrusive to do that, but that's what ended up happening through the YouTube AdWords. So they quickly shut it down. They said, you're not allowed to advertise this any further. And it's completely demonetized. It doesn't matter if it has 10 million views. And in fact, we now found out, it's now been released publicly, that there were complaints from Google employees about the video. It went up to VP Vishal Sharma, And he said, yes, this is contrary to our mission. We reviewed it, and we will not allow this to be advertised, even though all I did was just look at what Scripture said about the issue. So we've definitely been hit with intolerance. We've definitely been hit with bigotry. And now, most recently, we discovered one day, it's about 2 weeks ago, that our whole channel, almost 1,600 videos, has been demonetized completely. And they said, well, they're content and copyright issues. So we said, what? I have every email from you saying we have no copyright strikes against us. Our account shows no copyright strikes against us. You sent us emails saying you're not in trouble, nothing's happened. Could you tell us which videos are in question? No. Can you explain what exactly happened? No. Figure it out, and you can reapply in a month. Get it right. So that's where things stand. We're in touch with an attorney to try to flesh things out. But it's quite extraordinary, and we're not the only ones that this is happening to. And again, all we're asking for is fairness, consistency, and be forthcoming. Tell us what's going on.
There's a lot to unpack there, so we'll start one by one. As far as like what the Scripture says about LGBT issues, I'm sure you've read the great American novel Huckleberry Finn. And basically what happens when Huckleberry Finn decides to help his runaway slave friend Jim escape slavery, as a white male that was socialized in that parlance of those times, he was socialized to believe that slaves are inferior to them, and it was based on Southern biblical belief. And so when he makes that decision, the crescendo, if you will, to actually help him and escape, he actually says, he's actually thinking he's damning his whole soul to hell. And I think that's what he says, so I'll go to hell. So there's been a lot of different varying viewpoints on a lot of things scripturally since the Bible was first written. Would you agree on that?
Oh yeah. Well, there are a few things to unpack in what you just said. Christians have often been out on the wrong side of social issues, no question. And Christians have used the Bible to keep women down. They've used the Bible to support slavery, to support segregation. On the flip side, it was Christians who fought to abolish slavery. The William Wilberforces in England and the Harriet Beecher Stowes in America, they were at the forefront of the abolition movement. The civil rights movement started in churches and things like that. So the question is, are we using the Bible rightly, or are we misusing it? Or are we using it to set people free, or are we using it to bring them into bondage? And that's a fair question to have. As far as homosexual practice, that's never been debated in the history of the church until recently. In other words, there's not a single verse in the Bible that commends or speaks well of homosexual practice, and every verse where it's mentioned is against it. But even if someone wants to debate that, no argument, fine, let's have a civil debate. Let's agree to disagree. Let's put the issues on the table. My issue is with the unfair treatment of YouTube and Google. In other words, if all I did was lovingly present what the church and synagogue have believed for thousands of years about Scripture in a non-condemning way, offering God's love to everyone, that what Google and YouTube are basically saying is the Bible itself is against our mission. And I just think that needs to be known publicly, that they've made themselves clear that a biblical message or a historic Christian message is something that they will not allow to be advertised on their platform.
So again, there are affirming churches. You mentioned some of the people that were Christians that helped in slavery. Since our founding, we had slavery, and that process took almost 100 years in of itself. So, and we're at the very beginning. The Stonewall riots were in 1967 or 1968. And so we're 30 to 40 years within the LGBT liberation movement. And for you to say that you emphatically know that your reading of this is correct, I think is a little bit disingenuous.
Well, I'm quite confident that I'm understanding Scripture correctly, but that wasn't my argument here. That was not my point. In other words, I understand that others differ here, okay? I've had public debates with gay activists and gay pastors and et cetera, and I'll gladly do that. And we're friendly before, we're friendly afterwards. I'm happy to have that debate. That's totally separate from what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it's simply reading scripture and then holding to what the church and synagogue have held to for millennia. YouTube and Google are publicly saying this is against our mission and we will not allow that to be advertised on our platforms. I just think that needs to be known. That's all. I'm very happy. I categorically differ with your comparison between homosexual relations and slavery. Okay.
Okay.
You're talking about, you know, comparing apples with oranges there, and I'm happy to go in any direction you want. It's your show.
Okay.
All I want to do is make clear I'm not saying Google has to agree. I'm not, and if they want to say we're going to ban the Bible or ban the historic teaching of the church from being advertised on our platform, that's up to them. They just need to say that publicly.
And just to clarify, the reason why I brought up slavery is that's a very historical sense where the institutionalized church was very, very wrong. And they used biblical, you know, what they would call then biblical worldview to enforce it. In your article about this issue, about YouTube's, you basically talk about their ongoing changing of their terms and conditions and state, quote, "I'm talking about YouTube approving a video one day that speaks out against abortion while telling me on another day a generic video where I answer callers' questions about the Bible is not suitable for most advertisers." I don't think you're unique in this. I don't think you're targeted by YouTube for your Christian beliefs. If you haven't noticed, like, YouTube is kind of a wild west, and there's a bunch of things that appear on there, and it feels like there's no moderators at all. So my experience with YouTube, I would say that this is kind of a typical experience, and if no matter what walk of life you come from with them.
Yeah, so two things. One is that when it came to our video, "Can You Be Gay and Christian?" It's documented. We have the actual quotes. A whistleblower, a software engineer at Google, has described the hostile environment there for a Christian to be in. Others have documented the extreme intolerance within Google in the name of tolerance. And it cuts in different directions, but especially against conservatives. So we have the actual quotes. We have the actual quotes from the 30,000 people on the list server that were getting these emails saying that this video is, quote, very counter to their mission, especially during Pride Month. They mentioned, because the video came out in May, so it was playing in June. And we have the words of the VP, Vishal Sharma, specifically about our video, saying, yes, this is against their mission, and it's against what they stand for, and it's attacking people for who they are, whereas the video does no such thing. So that we know. And by the way, about slavery, the church has had a battle over slavery for many, many centuries. And in America, there was a battle over it from early on, and there were those opposing it, fighting against it. So that's hardly, again, comparable to the issue of homosexual practice. But when it comes to the larger issues of YouTube, when I started getting hit with stuff, I found out that there were transgender channels, and they were complaining about similar things. And I found out that there were liberals getting hit and conservatives getting hit. So I've got two separate issues. The one issue is out of the horse's mouth, Google targeting one of my videos with biblical content, saying it's against their mission. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is YouTube demonetizing my entire channel and refusing to say why. And this has happened now to a couple of my conservative friends within the last couple of days, actually. Same deal. And we don't have to tell you why. How widespread that is with others, I'm not sure. But that's why all I'm saying is give us the rules and play by the rules, and then we can decide if we want to play the game with you or not. But it's chaos, and to me there's a certain arrogance with a company. You work with them, you pour content in, they're making money off of you with the platform, and they won't even communicate or say what the alleged offense is. That concerns me. And in my case, there could be a connecting of the dots. I don't know, but I do know for sure that we have had intolerance towards our viewpoints expressed by Google leadership.
Have you read Ashley Feinberg's interview with Jack Dorsey? Basically, Jack Dorsey's the president of Twitter, and why this is relevant is Ashley was actually able to get him to talk human speak instead of tech jargon. And basically he admitted he didn't know what he was doing. I mean, this is definitely what I kind of see this YouTube controversy as being.
Well, let me ask you this, Heather. I'm a radio host too, so if you don't mind, let me ask you a question.
Sure, absolutely.
And this is not to interrogate or anything, but Jack Dorsey talked about the transgender issue and misgendering someone, and I understand there's a desire to say, hey, this is someone's personhood. They're very sensitive. They suffered great rejection already, and we are not going to allow our platform to be one where people are hated or demeaned. It seems to me that in a zeal to stand with people, that there is an overreaction, so that now you're going to actually tell people you have to use these pronouns, this type of speech. It's a crime if you misgender someone. You know, it's the case in the UK now where a woman's been accused of misgendering on social media, and police have been to her home. I'm wondering if you, as someone that is very sympathetic to the left, do you think there's any overreaction of trying to show solidarity with everyone that it can go too far and now you actually enforce certain speech codes and things like that?
Oh, absolutely not. There's, you know, to paraphrase somebody who has passed, who is like a punk legend, I have wonderful news for the world. The term politically correct doesn't exist. It's just being polite. I will volley that question and I'll play this John Oliver clip and we'll get your opinion on this.
I call a transgender person, it's so confusing. Well, actually, it's pretty simple. Call them whatever they want to be called. You can do it. We do it all the time. Think of it this way. David Evans woke up one day and said, everyone call me the Edge. And we all went, fine, the Edge. Are we talking the noun or the verb? And that's... It's not just that. It's not just that. Over the past 20 years, we've agreed to call this man Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Just Diddy, and now Puff Daddy again, and most people don't even like him.
Yeah. What do you say to that?
If someone wants to go by a certain name, I'm not obligated to call him by that name. And
wow.
If you decide that you want to be called they or we, or I'm not obligated to do it. Why would I be obligated to do that? Why would I be punished for not... Here...
You're not obligated.
I've got a PhD in Semitic languages, so in certain circles, I'm Dr. Brown, okay? And my website, Ask Dr. Brown, I become known as that. Well, people have called me Dr. Brown. I get called everything 24/7 on the internet. That's perfectly fine. Whatever. I'm not going to penalize someone for them or say you have to do that or this is how I, you know, if I'm close to someone for many, many years, you know, I've got an older cousin. And he's now changed his name and identifies as a woman. If I have a problem with that, and his own kids have a problem with that, if I still want to call him by his old name, that's up to me. If he wants to cut me off, that's up to him. But my issue is, are you now going to penalize someone on social media for that, or take them to court? Because if Heather, you really felt deep down that you were a male, and I referred to you as a she. Should I be penalized for that? Is it criminal? Is it that? That's my issue. But you cut me off. Call me a jerk. Call me a bigot. Call me a transphobe. That's your prerogative. But are we now going to enforce this legally? Is that what it's come to?
I'm not sure if it's being enforced legally.
Well, I just referred to a... Well, okay, people are getting banned from Twitter.
That's totally different than being enforced legally.
Oh, okay. In the UK, there's a case right now. I just was looking at it earlier today, where there was a woman, a Catholic woman. She was on a show, and another woman had her child there. The boy identifies as a girl, whichever way it was. She later tweeted about it and referenced the child according to the biological sex. Police showed up at her house because there was a complaint from the mother that she misgendered her son. It's being investigated as a criminal case.
I'm
it's
sure
the
there's more
Canada
to it than
now.
So misgendering is just... So when you misgender somebody, that's one thing. If you're a caretaker of that person, there's a whole lot more going on than just misgendering. And the police should show up and make sure that child is okay.
No, it's exactly as I described it. It was a post on social media, and the mother reported it. And in Canada, it is the law. that Jordan Peterson spoken openly about this, that you can't, it is a criminal offense to misgender someone. That's my issue. If society decides that if I refer to Bruce Caitlin Jenner as he, that I'm an idiot and a jerk and should be rejected and vilified, that's society's choice. That's a free society.
Sure, okay.
But for society to penalize me if I refuse to call Caitlin Jenner she, then that's where I have an issue.
I have not, I'll claim ignorance on this one. I have not seen the statutes for Canada, but I'm sure it's not nearly that bad. One thing I want to get to, we do have a caller. Our number is 503-231-8187 if you want to get in on this conversation. One of the things I don't think secular people realize about the Christian right, for a better lack of a phrase, is they have parallel institutions that run exactly as secular ones. For example, for secular Netflix, there's Pure Felix. For the ACLU, there's the ACLJ. For stand-up comedy, there's Christian stand-up comedy, which feels like an oxymoron, but, you know, who's counting? What would you say to the argument, why don't you start up your own Christian version of YouTube?
Well, firstly, I'm really happy to reach people that differ with me.
Yeah,
as long as the playing field is fair.
And I think
so.
I just want to thank you for being on the air again.
Oh, well, of course. Well, thank you for having me. I have these discussions day and night. And if at the end of the day, your listeners think I'm a jerk and love you all the more for doing this, that's fine. In other words, all I want to do is have an honest discussion and let people come to their conclusions, whatever those conclusions might be. But if in fact I have to compromise content to be on YouTube, or if I have to hold back from things I hold sacred, say to stay active on Facebook, where we have almost 600,000 folks and we're active there, then I would pull out in a heartbeat. If it's a matter of withholding truth or things that I feel are important, yeah, you know, of course I'd get out of it. But I on YouTube and Facebook, I can reach a ton of people that differ with me all the time, every day, and it's a great platform. So our whole philosophy is to use every means available, but if the things are not fair, if rules are not rightly enforced, if we're working hard, see, for example, on YouTube, with all of our videos, we're a nonprofit ministry. So if some of the videos do really well, that can actually bring in a little YouTube income because we're monetized, and then we just put that back to make more videos. In other words, we never make money from it, but we can make more videos to get our message out to more people. And we have a ton of different issues that we cover. We happen to hit on the ones most controversial between you and I, which is wise for your show. But we have a ton of videos on all kinds of interesting subjects. So it works well. But if the day comes when YouTube is going to enforce things on us that we differ with, then we'll be out of there in a heartbeat. As for Christians creating something just as big, people are working on it, but remember, the Christian population is a certain population of the society, whereas YouTube, you know, Facebook and all that, that's like everybody. So by nature, it's going to be bigger. But that being said, even though there's a lot of opposition to what we believe, I don't walk around thinking I'm the poor, persecuted minority and the whole world is against me. I'm blessed. We still have a lot of liberties here. We just think that there's been some overreaction and we're trying to balance things out.
Okay, that's fair. We're going to go to our first caller. Joan is on line one. Joan, welcome to the show. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Hi. I don't know anything about the Google thing. I don't know who that man was.
Oh.
But I did heard him. I heard him say churches and synagogues, blah blah blah, and I really it upsets me. Well, I get tired of hearing fundamentalist Christians start talking about what Jewish people believe as far as the Torah is concerned. And yes, there are ultra-conservative Jewish people, and there are ultra-progressive Jewish people who have really different views than that man happens to have about the interpretation of the Torah, which is the Jewish book.
Before,
so if he really wants to get together with some rabbis and discuss it, the Torah was meant to be reinterpreted in terms of the times that we live in. And, you know, if he can say what his beliefs are, he is not speaking for synagogues or for Jewish people.
Joan, his name is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay.
Yeah. Would you care to respond?
But,
to
yeah.
Yeah.
No. Oh, I don't.
Well, first
want to
I'm,
if he's still on the
yeah,
line.
I'm, first thing is, yeah.
I
first
really
thing
don't
is,
want to
I'm
get into
yeah.
a discussion with for, him. I just wanted to make that comment that he does not speak for the Jewish interpretation of the Torah. He does not speak for synagogues. He's speaking for himself, and he's perfectly entitled to do that. And a lot of the interpretations of the Torah that led to things like slavery, where people were using that as an excuse to have slaves, that has nothing to do with Judaism. And saying that it does, it contributes to anti-Semitism. And if people really want to get into the Bible, it's great. They can look at it from a Christian perspective and then try to understand the Jewish perspective, which is, I think, the perspective. Anyway, that's what I have to say, and thank you very much for letting me.
Thank you very much, Joan. That was a great call. Michael, what's your response to that?
Well, first, I'm Jewish. I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus, but I'm Jewish, and I've studied with rabbis for many, many years. That's number one. Number two, every word I said was 100% accurate, that the church and synagogue for millennia have said that homosexual practice was sinful. In the last 30, 40 years, there's been discussion, and yes, you have liberal Jews, for example, Reformed Jews, and now conservative Jews will have no problem ordaining, say, a gay rabbi or lesbian rabbi, but that's completely contrary to what's been taught. And there are churches that are, quote, progressive, that have gay pastors, et cetera, or affirming churches, as you referenced. My point was that the historic teaching, which I was 100% accurate in that, the historic teaching of church and synagogue has been that homosexual practice is forbidden by God and that God made men for women and women for men. There's no debate about that. There's not a rabbi on the planet from any background that would debate that that's been historically taught and believed. The other thing is the statement that Torah is to be reinterpreted in every generation based on culture. No, no, no. It's to be applied in every generation. You don't reinterpret adultery or murder or theft based on the current situation. So those that want to say homosexual practice is not contrary to Torah, then they have to look at it through all different angles. And of course, I can give you all the literature, the discussion of it, but interestingly, the whole point about anti-Semitism is my best-selling book of all time is a book exposing anti-Semitism in church history right until today. I'm finishing an article about anti-Semitism in surrounding Israel at this moment. But she's quite mistaken to have to say that Judaism is reinterpreting the Torah based on culture every generation. That would mean that culture rules rather than Torah having any kind of authority. That would mean it's just like a piece of clay you could shape and mold depending on the culture, as opposed to saying, in light of current culture, how do we apply God's eternal principles? That would be the issue there.
That's fair. I'm not like most atheists. I don't know the Bible at all because I just don't care. I'll be honest with you. But you did mention what was historically taught, and if you were Catholic in 1500s or so, you're historically taught that the sun revolved around the earth, and Galileo was in prison because he was projecting heresy. So I think when you say traditional teachings, things change.
Yeah, well, actually, the whole thing with Galileo is the Catholic Church was not basing things on Scripture. They were basing things on what they thought was the science of their day. There was the whole Copernican Revolution and what was actually taught. So, and Galileo was not doing this as a rebel to Catholicism or the Bible. He was challenging the science of the day that the Catholic Church had wrongly bought into, because that's what science thought at that time, that the sun revolved around the earth. And Galileo changed that. So Catholic Church's error then was not that they were basing things on Scripture, but that they were basing things on the wrong science of the day. But there's no question. I said it at the outset that Christians have been on the wrong side of various issues, have misused the Bible. There's no question about that. And my issue from the start has not been to say I'm the only one who's right. And obviously for you as an atheist, it's really not relevant to you what the Bible says or doesn't say. My issue had to do with fairness. My issue had to do with tolerance. My issue had to do with putting different viewpoints out on a platform. And all I'm asking for Google and YouTube is to be even-handed. If you want to talk about tolerance, then let it go both ways. If you say, no, we are exclusively a progressive liberal platform, and anything that's not in accordance with our views, we're gonna block or ban or forbid to advertise. Then just make it. Let there be your policy. Then we'll decide what to do.
Okay. We're going to take our halfway break. We have a caller on hold. We're going to get you right after the break. This is the Heather McCoy Show. My guest is Dr. Michael Brown. You can find his website at askmichaelbrown.org. Is that right?
Askdrbrown.org.
Yeah. Okay. I forgot to write that down. So this is the Heather McCoy Show.
I might catch some perch.
Show.
And welcome back to the Heather McCoy Show. Joining me right now is Dr. Brown, and we're talking about YouTube and basically the privatization of our commons, essentially, is what we're getting down to. So we have caller on the line one, Camillo. You're on the air.
Yeah, there's a dial tone in the background.
There's a dial tone in the background. Yeah.
Okay,
so I think we'll be good.
All right. I simply want to confirm what Dr. Brown said about YouTube being arbitrary and not being clear about whatever their policy is. And the example I have to offer is I'm a member of Buddhist Sangha. We had regular broadcasts of our weekly practice sessions at the Sangha, and it was canceled with no explanation, no indication of whether there was any kind of problem, no communication about the reason why or when things will be back up. And we have months of these recordings that have been lost to us. So whatever his point of view about political subjects, I'm really ignorant and not really concerned about that, but he's absolutely correct about YouTube.
Okay. Dr. Brown.
Yeah, it is a larger problem. Again, so we have the two things, the ideological issues, which we've documented, which we're aware of, and the issues of inconsistency. It's either, Heather, you referenced it as Wild West. It's either extreme ineptness or extreme arrogance or a combination of both. Who actually reviews content? Is it some 18-year-old just out of high school who's making minimum wage sitting there? Is it executives making decisions? Is it algorithms? But the real problem, as our caller just mentioned, Camilla mentioned, is that a lot of stuff you have on YouTube you don't have backed up. You have video after video after video, and then if they shut you down, the content can be lost. A lot of people don't even realize that, but that's a very real possibility. So it's a shame that's happened to you, sir. And the thing is, if you did something wrong, then let them tell you what you did wrong, and then you can make a decision. Okay, we're going to keep doing this, and if we can't do it on YouTube, then we'll be off YouTube. Or, we can easily correct that. But when you have no idea what, why, and when the customer services, I hate to speak evil of the company, but I couldn't imagine them doing a worse job of customer service. And it's case after case after case. So if enough of us bring this to the surface, and then if they're with larger cases, actual lawsuits, let them just deal uprightly with people that are using their platform. They're making enough money from it. Surely they can do a better job.
I would just want to interject. Nothing's backed up because, I don't have a very big YouTube channel, but I basically upload things direct. Are you doing YouTube Live, or just for clarification, how are things not backed up?
Well, it's a live program, and the programs get recorded.
Okay.
We had a link to YouTube in order to see things from the past. And, I don't believe that we did anything wrong in a Buddhist Sangha that they could object to politically or in any respect. But one can only speculate as to their motivation because they don't reveal anything at all.
Yeah. As we've noted that YouTube and its parent company, Google, are private companies. However, the internet was a taxpayer invention that has now largely been privatized. Recently on our show, we did an interview with Kashmir Hill. She's a journalist who documented how hard life is computing if you use a VPN to block Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook from your computer. Ultimately, this leads to a discussion of the privatizations of public squares in the last 50 years, whether it be spatial, with most of our shopping centers being under private property, or virtual in the terms of the internet communications that are hosted by private internet companies, does it not?
Well, I agree with you about that.
Yeah. Dr. Brown?
Yeah, and Heather, I'm not an expert on a lot of the issues of privatization, et cetera. What I've focused on is that you have community guidelines. I mean, this happened early on with Facebook when people took exception to things we had posted, and I interacted with a Facebook rep who was actually very helpful in this case, and I said, okay, did we violate guidelines here? And if we violated your guidelines, for example, if a certain post of mine was considered hate speech, I said, okay, look at all these accounts, and they were vulgar, horrific. They were either kill the Jews or, vulgar, use an atheist, you can be an atheist, but then there's ugly stuff, just mocking religious beliefs and profane, portraits of Jesus and sexual poses. And I sent them all those pages from Facebook, and I said, excuse me, what I don't understand is my respectful difference with someone over this is considered hate speech, and I got blocked, but all these are not considered hate speech. So that's been the issue from the start. I understand lines are going to be drawn. Here's someone showing how to make a bomb to kill people. Here's how to kidnap someone. There's certain things you're going to have to block. But my issue continues to be, go just play by the rules. If you have community guidelines, then let them go in all directions so that they're fair to everyone. If no one can cross a certain line, then no one can cross that line. If half the people can and half can't, that's unfair. And then you have no idea what you're doing. For example, we posted, it was just a cartoon that someone had drawn up, a political cartoon, and it showed John Kerry with a Hamas leader and Benjamin Netanyahu. And the Hamas leader was holding a sign saying, kill the Jews. And Kerry was saying to Netanyahu, can you at least meet us halfway? And the thing went viral on our Facebook page, and then we got blocked. And when we asked why, they said, well, you advocate killing the Jews. I said, no, the cartoon is exposing Hamas terrorism. I said, oh, sorry, we misread it. Okay, that was an honest error. They owned up to it. But in other cases, you have no idea what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable, what's unacceptable. And that's the thing that can be so frustrating, because you're trying to play by the rules. In other words, I want to respect your platform. I'm trying to play by the rules, but they keep shifting.
But do you honestly think that John Kerry wants to engage in genocide? Like, he's a lame politician. Like,
oh yeah, all it was saying was that it's not, you don't have an equality between Hamas and Netanyahu. And when Kerry's, it was just a parody. The whole thing was just exposing that you can't negotiate with a terrorist. That's all it was. But in any case, it was a political cartoon. It violated,
okay.
And it got misread by someone on Facebook. That can happen, but then they apologized and said, our bad, no problem. I live with that. That was,
yeah.
Human beings can make errors. But when we're not told what the issue is, when Camillo has no idea what the issue is, that's what we're shouting from the rooftops.
But when you were talking about this respectful difference, like, I don't think you were talking earlier before our break though, about misgendering somebody, and that's, you're right. That's not a respectful difference. I'm sorry. Like, I mean, that's the reason why, just the vitriol that's hurled at trans people is one of the reasons why they commit suicide. I mean, you acknowledge this in your 7 reasons why the transgender revolution is going to fail, is because, like, you basically said that, trans people have a high rate of suicide, and it's not some, we're happy with ourselves. It's the fact that we have to deal with an outside world that treats us as other. And that's where, and so it's not a respectful difference. It really isn't.
Well, if you want to go in this direction, I'm happy to. And please tell me where I'm crossing the line. Okay.
The fact that you dead name Caitlyn Jenner, that's crossing the line.
But okay, if I am convinced that Bruce Jenner is a biological male, that DNA says that he is a male, all right, that there's no evidence that he is actually biological female, if there are feminists who are upset with the transgender movement because they say it is now making a mockery of what it means to be a woman, if there are children in school who have been traumatized by the girls who have been traumatized by the presence of males in their locker room and in their shower stalls, okay, this is all documented. Is there no other side to this?
There's no other side.
To bow down to what someone simply perceives, and then that becomes reality, and now you can transgress on these kids and traumatize them?
Transgress?
The Charlotte Observer. Yeah. In other words, because let's say you're a male, you identify as a female,
uh-huh.
you're gonna now run on their track team and beat these girls who have been training so hard for all these years that even Martina Navratilova says it's not fair. Is there no other side to the story?
No,
discussion of it?
Okay, so there's some really fundamental misunderstandings you have. First, there's a difference between sex and gender. There's people that are born male, there's people that are born female. Some of them don't proclaim a gender at all, but they're one particular sex. They're called genderqueer. There's some people that are considered cisgendered, which would be assumingly you. And then there's people that are trans. And so the gender is a spectrum. The binary is with the sex, unless you count intersex people, but I don't feel like they should be pulled in this discussion at all because it's not respectful. So that's the point you're missing. As far as the TERFs, which is called trans exclusionary radical feminists, they're made fun of. I mean, they're kind of like, for better lack of a term, they're kind of like Jesse Jackson. Like, Jesse Jackson hasn't had a firmware update since 1979, and it makes him a really crappy activist. And so that's the position that the TERFs are in. As far as sports...
But that, you just disrespected a whole group. See, that's what I'm saying. That in your mind, you're being fair, you just disrespected a whole group. Get the book Female Erasure. These are leading feminist thinkers, okay? And they're all saying the same thing. They would hate me. They'd hate what I stand for. But you just mock them
yeah.
and disparage them.
Uh-huh.
But that's okay. You can do that. And I fully understand the semantic difference between sex and gender.
Okay.
I made no mistake about that. What I said was that if there is a biological male and he identifies as a female and he wants to run on the girls' track team, now he beats these girls because he's a biological male, that's not fair. Nor is it fair to them that he shares their locker room or shower stall. That's unfair to them. That's an intrusion on their privacy. And it's something now that more and more people are protesting, even athletes who are liberal, even lesbian, are saying it's not fair for a biological male to compete with a biological female. It's not fair to the women.
I mean,
I feel like you're just trashing them and disparaging them.
No, and to say that just because somebody's a lesbian means that they're liberal. I mean, have you heard of the log cabin Republicans? So the sports thing. If you have a trans person, just because they're male doesn't make them default good at something. You have to practice for hours at it. I'm a huge soccer fan.
But it's not even fair, though. Surely you know that men biologically are bigger and stronger than women biologically. So if they all practice just as hard, the male has unfair advantages.
No, they don't.
But there was a male...
They don't, because you're on hormone blockers. You're on estrogen. Like, when you go on estrogen, the amount of muscle mass that you lose when you're on estrogen is phenomenal. It is, you just...
So you're only saying then, to be clear, so the boys in high school, the biological males who are racing against biological females, and they are not on any treatment now, you're saying that's unfair. They still have to be on hormone treatments because these males, biological males, are not on any hormone treatments. They're not taking estrogen, nothing.
How do you know?
They identify as female, and they are winning their races.
But
and two now in the state races.
But you don't know that because, you have medical privacy rules. You don't know what medication they are or not taking.
We do know. It's been discussed openly. They've said it. They're not. Nothing's been done yet. But your point then
that's relative.
Hormone blockers for a certain number of years, so that the muscle mass can be diminished.
No.
Then at that point, it's fair.
No. So it depends on when the child transitions. But when you're on hormone blockers, you just don't develop the secondary sex traits, including the bigger muscle mass. Male and female are pretty malleable up until puberty. Puberty is what gives you your secondary sex traits. If you're on hormone blockers since you're 7 years old, for example, which does occur, you never develop those muscles, and it's completely fair. And
we're not talking about cases like that. We're talking about
a male weightlifter
in New Zealand and Australia, a male weightlifter who was a competing weightlifter, competing and winning among men. Now he is crushing. He's setting all the world records, crushing all the women. You look at the pictures, he's like twice the size of these ladies. All right, and he's only transitioned within the last few years. That's unfair to the women. But here's the thing. Martina Navratilova has been an outspoken liberal proponent of LGBT rights for years. But here's the point.
No,
it's not disrespectful to have the conversation. But what about the 15-year-old girls who are traumatized
by the presence of some of them been raped. Okay, some of them had problems with men and males already. Okay, now you have a biological male changing next to them, and they're told get over it, or put up a curtain. So that's unfair to them.
What do you think is happening in bathrooms? Like what? I mean, what? I mean, like seriously, like I. Like most modern gyms, you basically have so many different corridors. You don't see anybody naked. I mean, like, what do you?
You have a changing room for men and a changing room for women. There's case after case after case after case of women. The Planet Fitness. This has happened in other places where there's a woman trying to change and their biological male walks in and she's like, sir, you're in the wrong room. Now she gets in trouble for misgendering him. That's wrong. That's unfair. That's wrong. That's a violation of her privacy.
Wow. We have caller Jenny. You're on line one. Turn down your radio, Jenny. Jenny goes going in 5, 4, 3. Are you there with us?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Sorry. Okay. I wanted to return to the topic of tolerance.
Okay, go for it.
And ask Dr. Excuse me?
Go for it.
And ask Dr. Brown if he considers himself a tolerant person.
Okay.
You bet.
Wow. I mean, who are you tolerating exactly if you don't like LGBT people?
I didn't say I didn't like them.
Well, I mean...
That's a yes or... Are you a tolerant person? That is the question. That's a yes or no.
Yes, you bet. Extremely. Patient, long-suffering, kind to those I differ with, open about my differences, but you bet. No question about it.
So, in your world, how would LGBT, especially trans people, live?
They'd live however they want to live. That's their business. That's their life. But if it imposes on someone else, just like anything else, okay? If a 15-year-old boy identifies as a girl and is uncomfortable in the boy's bathroom, then let him have a bathroom he can use by himself. But don't impose it on the other girls. The thing is, don't impose it so it's going to cause hurt or inconvenience or pain for others. That's it.
Separate but equal has been ruled against, right?
I'm not really concerned about what the rule was. You asked how someone's going to live in terms of in what my world is. And by the way, there are active cases in the courts about these girls being traumatized. There are cases. I don't know if they've gotten how far they're getting to the Supreme Court. But separate but equal is not even the issue here, though.
Does
a male have the right, does a biological male have the right to traumatize a female by being in her space? What about her space? What about her rights? What about being tolerant towards her? Why is it that if I perceive myself a certain thing, that trumps a biological reality for someone else? The Charlotte Observer infamously said the girls are just going to have to get used to the presence of male genitalia in their showers and locker rooms. That's obscene. That's gross. That's wrong. That's not what this world is about.
Have you been to a modern like gym facility? I have not seen any genitalia exposed at all because there's so many different maze aspects to the facility that you're not getting clear shots of anything, and people are very modest, and I don't. Yeah. So we have one more caller. Paul, you're on the air.
Yeah. Dr. Brown, you know, you're throwing up a lot of straw men, which is what the right always does and has been doing for years when it comes to LGBT issues. You know, I mean, this sounds very similar to the whole don't ask, don't tell. Well, we can't have openly gay people serving in the military because if we do, all these horrible things are going to happen. It's going to break up, it's going to break up group cohesion. This whole bathroom issue is nothing but a straw man that the political right and Christian fundamentalist nuts like yourself like to bring up.
Paul, thank you for your question. We're wrapping up very shortly. So yeah, yeah, go ahead and answer.
Here's where you see the intolerance. First thing, I'm talking about factual cases. In one Chicago school district alone, there are over 50 girls and their parents who've brought this to court because of their real experiences. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, there's a great increase in male rape in the military right now. Not widely reported, but that's a fact. And number three, I've not called anybody names. Hear the caller, right-wing nuts. You see where the intolerance is. It's coming from the other side, not from my side. I respectfully differ, and I'll fight for your right to differ with me. And if anyone tried to lay a finger on you, they'd have to get to me first. That doesn't mean I'm not going to differ openly and publicly, but let's have a fair and honest exchange of ideas. That's all I'm asking for.
And I do appreciate your time, and I do appreciate you joining me on the show today. My guest has been Dr. Michael Brown. You can his website is askdrbrown.org. Thank you again for being on the show, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
It would be a joy, Heather. Thank you for having me on. I mean that.
Okay. I enjoy this. This doesn't happen very often. I've invited other types of people that I vehemently disagree with on the show, and they never return my emails or never get press credentials to them. So you're a rare person to actually agree to do this, and so I thank you again for that.
Really, thanks for having me.
Okay. This is the Heather McCoy Show. Stay tuned next week. I don't know what I'm going to do. That's part of the fun of freeform radio. Coming up next is probably... Oh, I don't have the sheet. I don't have the sheet. I am so unprepared. I should... Between the Covers! Woohoo! And my gal Clementine, this is her last... Go on the mic. Turn on your mic. Go ahead. Yeah, there we go. Hi, Clementine.
Hello.
You have done an amazing job doing my show. She's moving on to other things. This is our last show together. I want to thank you very much. You're an amazing board op and an amazing volunteer at KBOO, and I hope you stay involved in some fashion, some way.
Of course I will. Thank you, Heather.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is the Heather McCoy Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the world premiere of Jump, co-produced by Confrontation Theater and the Milagro Theater. The play runs from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Jump is the story of a 20-something who is reeling from the death of her mother. She is looking for solace and a good place to vape, but what she finds is a journey of self-discovery. Again, that's Jump. Every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is looking for a grant writer to join our team. We are seeking someone with a proven track record in writing successful, complex proposals for diverse sources of grant funding. Previous experience working in the philanthropic landscape of the Portland metro area is preferred, and previous experiences working with community media organizations and with communities of color are A+. This is a 1-year contract position for a total of 200 hours at $25 an hour. And the grant writer will work closely with the KBOO Development Director.